Welcome back to Speaking with Authority. I'm your host, Jim Ketting, and I'm excited about our guest today. Have you ever worked with somebody that's incredibly talented, but nobody really trusted them? Or been part of a company that hired really great people, but somehow that culture is dysfunctional? I've spent years helping leaders with communication and relational trust and alignment and execution and capacity and all the culture things. And one observation that keeps showing up is organizations don't succeed because of people. They succeed because of relationships. And the problem is that relationships don't work, or they don't even happen without trust. So when there's no trust, there's no vulnerability, there's no accountability, there's no collaboration, there's no influence. And today's guest has spent decades studying one question: why do some leaders and organizations earn extraordinary trust while others lose it? And more importantly, can trust actually be built? Now, David, and I'm going to butcher your name. It's Horsager?
Yeah. David Horsager.
Horsager.
You should have probably written it in there. Here, I'll add
I should have done that. David Horsager is one of the world's leading authorities on trust. And his research has identified 8 pillars that consistently show up that most trusted leaders and organizations have. He's worked with Fortune 500 companies, governments, healthcare systems, organizations around the world. But what fascinates me the most is what trust makes possible, because every leader wants influence, and every leader wants alignment, and every leader wants to work together towards a common goal. But trust is the bridge that helps you get there. So, David, welcome to Speaking with Authority.
Thank you so much, Jim. Great to be here.
So, David, you spent years researching leadership and organization. What was the first thing that convinced you that trust was a common denominator behind great leaders and great organizations?
Before my graduate work and all those kinds of things, I tell you, I had built some leadership curriculum. I was young. It was largely for colleges and college age and youth and stuff. So I'm in my 20s. And I remember being asked, though, even corporate folks started hearing about this, and they said, oh, we want this here. So I remember where I was in Arizona when I was out on the deck after this day, and Lisa was with me. We didn't have 4 kids yet. And I was just looking up the sky and was just kind of thinking, and it was just like, I don't think their problem's a leadership issue. They don't trust the guy. And then I started thinking, you know, oh, I don't think that's a sales issue. They don't trust, or, you know, and I started innovation. They're not innovating. They're not sharing ideas because they don't trust each other. And I just started, it was just intuitive at the time. And then that led to my graduate work, and that became, of course, important and much, or kind of somewhat famous to people much more important than me. And that led to, you know, our ongoing research out of the Institute and my books and speaking. And we, you know, several years later, we tried it in a company and they dropped attrition by millions. And then we had, you know, a Fortune 50 company say it helped them gain, you know, 11% market share. And then we had one of the biggest companies in the world say it helped them gain engagement scores. And we had the Admiral of the Navy say it helped them drop suicide rates. So, you know, 20 some years later, we all, you know, just kept getting amplified more and more and more. And we see like trust is the core issue, I believe. But back then, at first, you know, what shifted me to doing my grad work on it was just this kind of epiphany or experience that's like, I don't think that's it. It's not, you know, it's not that issue or that issue. It's actually a trust issue.
That's so good. Now, a lot of leaders will say that that is important. You say it is the leading indicator. What's the difference?
Well, people think, oh, it's really important. Trust. No, it is the most important. And I do not like high ego folks, or it's always this way, or it's always that way. In fact, I'm writing a book right now on how, you know, we actually often have to manage intention. Like, it's not always certain ways, but in this way, I do believe it is always trust. Trust is always the leading indicator of anything good. So for instance, people say, I've got an engagement issue. Well, you might, but the only way to get engagement is not with more engagement. What we've learned is we have to increase trust. That's what gets you the outcome of engagement. So the leading indicator of engagement is trust. That promoter score, I remember working with the chief culture officer of United Health Group and said, well, here's what we're learning with your work is it's not a net promoter score or a referral issue. When we increase trust, then we get referrals. I remember we had this little project bringing Walmart folks and Procter & Gamble folks together. It was like, when we trust each other, that's when we get the innovation happening. It's not like team building or something. It's like trust was the leading indicator of the outcomes of efficiency, you know, team building, ideas, innovation, and all that. So I don't, you know, I just see trust is always the leading indicator of anything, things they want. In fact, the first half of my research kind of shows that. You wanted more income or more revenue, you had to increase trust somewhere. You, not communication, not leadership, not what you had to increase trust. And that, you know, it's same in all sectors too, because like in education, okay, we need better classroom management. Well, we increase trust in the teacher or the school or the superintendent. Oh, we need a referendum. Oh, you don't get that passed without trust in the community. So if we could increase trust, same with, you know, one of the boards I've been on is, you know, in Capitol Hill here in the U.S. and bringing Republicans and Democrats together. It's like the bigger problems we have, the more we have to actually build trust and collaborate. And we're losing in massive ways today because of a lack of trust. GDP is a trust score. Your credit score is a trust score. It's actually the leading indicator of your credit score is how much you're trusted by the lender. You pay less over the course of loan because you have higher trust. So it's just, I see, it's always the leading indicator of anything good in your marriage or anything else, you know?
I think this is very interesting. And a lot of times CEO says, well, I can't measure this on a financial statement, but you've got some methodologies and some ways of measuring that for a company. Walk me through that. How does a company measure trust?
Well, first, you know, like I said, the first half of the research showed how a lack of trust is the biggest cost. The second half showed, it really revealed, well, how do you actually build it? So everything is measured against that 8-pillar framework, even though we have, you know, we have measurement tools that we built, my grad work plus 40 years of Accenture data, that is the Enterprise Trust Index that measures trust in organizations, countries have used it, you know, big universities have used it. And then we have a team assessment. We have a self assessment. We have a 360 assessment. We have a customer assessment. But it always comes back to those eight. And those 8 pillars of trust were validated by several universities. Most recently was a social research lab at the University of Northern Colorado, I believe. But you had to first figure out how actually is trust built. And that's what came out of my research, because you can't measure it unless you first can define that. And then you have to define what are the behaviors for that. So it's they're measured against that 8-pillar framework. I can give you a quick glimpse on those, you know, just to give context. But of course, we could talk about each of them all day.
So when trust is low, where does an organization need to, where does an organization pay the price first?
Well, it can depend on how, it depends. Like if you have a certain type of trust, like it could be something else first, but it always costs in money and time. And other things. So you could think of, you know, the Deflategate. You know, it was a sports issue, right? Well, that ended up costing the NFL, you know, tens of millions of dollars. You could think of Volkswagen. They first it cost in reputation, but then it cost, you know, $35 billion. The Catholic Church, it first cost in these cases and these different things when they had a challenge with trust. With certain leadership, and that ended up costing $4 billion in less than a decade. So it costs, that skepticism costs, right? Think about it simply. I can go into all the research, but you can think of this, like there's only one reason I'd put a lock on something, right? Only reason I'd put a lock on my bicycle, my home, or my car is because I don't trust. So what's that costing? Well, I got to go buy the lock. That costs me money, but the biggest cost is time. Now I got to open it every time I go through the gate, or what is a combination lock, right? That takes forever. Or if I have to double check on someone, first that costs me time, but then it costs money too, because it costs my mind share and my time. It costs me stress in home. You know, if I trust my kids with who they're going out, you know, with his friends, like, oh, that's nice. If I don't trust who they're going out with, it's the biggest stress I have at home. But that's the same at work. I got a team at work that they've got my back. I trust them. They got this. Oh, I got a team that I don't trust. That's the biggest stress I have at work, because, you know, it's costing both in time, money, and other things. So people say, I mean, I remember one time, one of the questions I ask in my keynotes is, you know, once we get into it, I say, what do you think a lack of trust is costing you? What's it costing? I had a CEO turn to me, say, it's $500 million, a quarter. And I, okay, so he jumped right to it. And other people say, well, it's attrition. So if I talk to someone about attrition, if they've lost someone they wanted to keep, in most industries right now, that's costing three times salary, like the hiring, training, all that kind of stuff. So you're at millions of dollars so quickly by losing maybe three people, right? So, in fact, the first reason time we really knew we had something was when we used this framework in a mental health group of clinics that was bleeding attrition. They said it saved them $2 to $4 million in 9 months. You know, so you can
it's very quantifiable. Yeah,
very quantifiable. Once you can measure it, and that's where I think the eight pillar framework comes in. When you can measure and define these areas, which were qualitative at first, that's how you're finding out data in this case, but we were able to quantify them.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about people and cultures and great companies. And so one of the things that I'll talk about or think about or discuss with others is when people talk about, our company's great because we got a great culture, or our company's great because we have great people. And I don't think that's necessarily true. When I started listening to Jeremy Kubitschek and Steve Cockrum, they said it's not the people, it's the relationships within the company. But relationship does not happen without trust. And so anytime you have two people, both of them have what's called a wall of self-preservation that is up in front of them. And they don't want to let that down until there's trust in that other person. And I can look at competency, credibility, character, all of those eight pillars. And some people, just based on their personality trait, they are born or have a few more than others do, where the other ones are not very prominent. So you can have somebody who's competent and credible. I just don't know if their character's right. I know they're competent. Mm-hmm. I know they're credible.
Yeah.
Character, I'm a little bit shy of. This one, I got great chemistry. I know their character's there. I just don't know if they're competent or credible. And so there's those issues that I think people look at that they've got to get to that trust point before a relationship happens. And before a relationship happens, that's the magic of that culture. Has that been something similar that you found?
Well, I think several things come to mind here. First of all, you're so right on relationship. I think it's really interesting. It's like it's not the people, like a person can be trusted or not. Like, what's that? But the relationship, if you think of, later today, I'm doing an international project for all about one of our pillars, which is the connection pillar. People trust that's your relationship pillar, right? It's like we trust those that are willing to connect and collaborate. We tend to trust this is where relationship is so important. And if you think back at the research I think it was in the book, The Myth of Genius, that showed how nothing great has ever been done by one person. There's such a push to independence, right? And so the author goes back and looks at anything great that we thought, okay, who invented the iPhone? It was Jobs, right? Well, he looks at, without Wozniak, nothing would have, without this person, without that person, right? It's like, he looked back at, who invented the cotton gin? Well, we learned in fourth grade, it was Eli Whitney. And when you look at the research, it looks like probably it was those enslaved laborers. And probably it was a woman named Catherine Green. You couldn't have a woman on a patent in those days. And so you look at any evolution. Well, Darwin wrote, people wrote on whoever it was, I can't spell his name, wrote on evolution 500 years before Darwin, if that was any, you know, it's like all these Edison invented the light bulb. He had like thousands of people that were inventing this. And in fact, there's a quote that I wrote down about Edison that was, you know, his greatness was in bringing the right people together, connecting relationships. He was a relationship builder. So yeah. I think that's number one. That's interesting on what you're talking about is it's relationships, not a person. Number two thought that comes to mind is that you said kind of around building it, the whole some people kind of have it or they don't. There's one truth in that people do, you know, have more character because of their background or have more of those eight pillars. That's true. A, that's true based on their environment. There's another adjacent piece from the research that might be interesting, and that is the data says today in America, and we do a global study, but just on the U.S. side here, half of Americans are apt to lead with skepticism. In other words, you have to build it before they trust you. And about half are apt to lead with trust. In other words, they trust you until you break it. And so that's a little bit interesting to, from what you were saying, because that for us as leaders, we don't have to do anything differently. We just have to build trust every day. But it's worth us knowing where people are coming from, because about that skeptical group, we might say, well, I lead with trust. Why can't they just trust me till I break it? Something often happened before they were 18 years old that wasn't even their fault. And that is the reason they lead with skepticism. But once again, it doesn't matter. We have to build the eight pillars every day. That's our job, no matter if they lead with skepticism or they lead with trust. There was something else, but I'm sure it'll come out as far as that goes with it, what you're saying. So
let me ask you this, the connection between, I don't know, trust and culture. I think a lot about when a culture is very supportive with not a lot of challenge, then they create an environment of entitlement. And when there's a lot of challenge without support, it's a fear and domination. So you've got to have a proper balance between those two things. Totally. Now, I can receive a lot of criticism from somebody who I know is for my best interest. They believe in me. There's a lot of support there. I can receive it. Somebody will say, change your camera angle, do this, talk this way from a speaking aspect. I have a trust there. There's a trust. But there are other people who I don't trust when they're giving me advice or critique or things like that, because I don't have that relationship. And I want to flesh out in that communication, when trust is low, what actually happens to communication on both sides?
Well, first of all, I'm going to back up on the word communication and just say, okay, you never have a communication issue.
Okay.
At the core, it is never, ever, ever a communication issue.
All right.
It is a trust issue, which always goes toward one of the pillars. That's why you have to know the pillars. I'm going to jump in right now and say them, because I can't hang any of these hats on anything without people knowing the framework.
Yeah, there are eight of them. Right? Let's go through them.
Yeah. Because now I can talk about it a long time, but it's like it really matters, and it matters to this question, but it matters to many of the questions. So once again, backing up from here, once again, I would say we don't have a leadership issue. The reason we follow a leader, not as trust. We don't have a sales issue. We buy based on trust. Innovation issue is a trust issue. Diversity is a trust issue. In a classroom, the only way you learn more is increased trust in the content, teacher, or safety, which is trust of the room. So we have to deal with trust. So how do we deal with it? These eight, I call them pillars today, and they're defined by C words, but please don't think of them as some kind of cutesy pastoral list. They each represent a very important research funnel. And so I think we have to hang our hat on these eight, and we always solve problems globally against these eight, even though we contextualize it. So they're simple sounding, and you'll be like, oh, of course, but they actually really matter. And here they are. So number one is clarity. People tend to trust the clear, and they mistrust or distrust the ambiguous or the overly complex. Or as a professor, we complexify things. Whenever we do, we lose clarity, which loses trust. Clear wins today, not cleverness. And when I talk about clarity and teach it, it's way more different than even most marketing and strategic people today. It takes way too much for most people to get to clarity at the level I'm talking about. Number two is compassion. We trust those that care beyond themselves. Compassion is, and this matters for what you were just talking about, because when we were talking about accountability, for example, healthy accountability even, there has to be both sides. We can't have micromanagement. That hurts people, but avoidance also hurts people. So how do we come together and have this healthy culture? You can't have a high trust culture without healthy accountability. And that means it's not just micromanagement and it's not just apathy. So Anyway, so we got clarity. We got compassion. Number three is character. We trust those that do what's right over what's easy. This is important, but it, once again, is not everything. I might trust Jim to take my kids to the ball game, but not give me a root canal, because competency also matters in the space that you want to be trusted. So you said something earlier about, well, yeah, some kind of the areas of trust. That's what we were talking about. And like, I might, there was a golfer that we might all know that lost trust because of something he did. He didn't lose trust in his competency, but went back to being the number one golfer in the world. But he lost trust as a brand. In fact, $110 million was pulled from his sponsorship in 2 weeks. So he lost in a different way. So I might still trust someone to play golf, and I might weight these differently. So my airline pilot, I really want them to be high on trust competency. If they aren't the kindest person, most compassionate, that's not as big a deal to me personally, right? But my nanny watches my kids. I want really high character and competency, for example. Now, to gain something we call the trust edge, you want all eight, but we might weight them differently based on what they're doing as well. So, okay, so we have four right now. We have clarity, we have compassion, we have character, and we have competency, okay? The next pillar is commitment. We tend to trust those that are committed in the face of adversity. I had put commitment under character in my original grad work, and there was just too much data that kept coming out that it was enough different in a way. So commitment is, if I think you're going to jump when there's a pandemic or things get hard, I might like you. You might need mental health help. That's all fine, but I won't trust you. I need to know you are going to stick with me. The next pillar is connection, collaboration, the willingness to connect and collaborate. The counterforce to this pillar is siloing. There's counterforces to each of these pillars, so that they're pushing against them. Maybe we'll get to that. But anyway, connection. The next pillar is contribution, which the number one word out of this research funnel was results. You've got to contribute results. You can't just have compassion. You can't just have character. You actually have to contribute results. So, you know, you got a high character, you're really compassionate, but, you know, the lawn doesn't get mowed, or my corn doesn't have higher yield, or we go in for amputation, you cut off the wrong leg, I don't trust you. We got to get the result we expected or asked for. This is the work of work. And finally, the queen and king of the pillars is consistency. I trust, you know, sameness is trusted. So whatever you do consistently, I will trust. If you're late consistently, I'll trust you to be late, right? So these are the eight pillars of trust. So these we can write down, we can tie to them, and these are how trust is built. And so let's go back quickly to Jim's example of communication. This is why at the core, it's never a communication issue on its own. Clear communication is trusted. Unclear, more unclear communication is not. Competent is trusted, more incompetent communication is not. Compassion is trusted, more hateful communication is not. And what we find is if we can pull people down to one more level, they will get what they meant by that type of communication, that type of leadership. People want to say things like engagement, we need that, or leadership, we need that, or communication. That's not what they mean. They actually always mean one of these eight to get the thing that they wanted.
That is so good. And I want to put a plug for your book in there too. So all of those are in this book, which is an excellent, excellent read. I highly recommend it. And it goes through and clearly talks about those eight pillars. It's just really, I mean, I love this. I'm fascinated with books, and this is well done. This is a great reference. I highly recommend this book.
Thank you. That's my fifth of all, and everything I talk about is trust, trust at a distance, but that Trust Matters book, the thing that I like about that is it's so tactical with tools you can use from the, you know, it's not like my first book that came out with all the research and all that. It was like, hey, I can use this tomorrow, right? But think back years ago, people thought there was no one doing research, almost no one doing real research. And so you had to show it because like, oh, that's a soft skill, or oh, that's mamby-pamby trust idea. So you had to like lead with the research. Now people don't ask about the research. They just want to know, oh, I get it. What do I do about it? So, you know, yeah, that one's very tactical.
I think that there's things that people do that kills their influence, and that always goes back to trust. They can't influence 100%. Others, because if you're not trusted, there's no influence there. Let's talk about some of the biggest trust killers. I heard a statement, and this is a little bit of course, but a guy was making a point, And he was making the point of saying and doing one things and your actions have matters, and the audience wasn't getting it. And he said, how many times would you have to catch your wife in an affair with another man before you didn't trust her? How many times would you have to do that? It's one time.
Right.
It's something that a lot of people don't realize. It's like, oh, well, they'll get over it. They'll do it. It's no. It's one time, mm-hmm. and it takes time to build back that trust. And a lot of times people have issues where they don't realize the things you're doing are killing their influence and killing their trust. So let's talk a little bit about the trust killers. What's the fastest way for a leader to destroy trust without really realizing they're doing it?
Well, you know, this is why we have to hang them on the pillars. So mm-hmm. a lack of clarity. You thought you're clear and you weren't. You lost trust. You thought you were competent. You know, we thought you were competent, going to get this job done, but the lawn looks terrible. That's lack of trust. You said you're committed, but now you got a better deal, so you canceled our contract and you did that contract. You just lost trust. So in one way, you can think of it, just go through the pillars, a breach of any of them, inconsistency, right? You said you were going to do this, you're consistently this way, but now you're not prepared for the meeting. You've been prepared for the meeting, now you're not prepared for meetings. All of a sudden, I lose trust. Other things that are counterforces on that, you know, arrogance. I know, you know, I remember teaching at one of our country's great military academies, and the commanding officer said, one of our big challenges here is we got some of the best, brightest, and bravest young men and women in the world here. The problem with a few of them, they think they are. And that's what's killing their leadership and impact. Like, that's a counterforce to trust. Or people say things they don't mean, like, just trust me, right? I did tell you said that, but trust is not stated, it's earned. Or people that say honestly or literally, they tend to lose trust. People that, you know, there's deeper ways too, going around people, a big senior leadership team I was working with, and this consensus building leader of one of the biggest companies in the world, his problem was his top 12 people, they would make a decision together and then they would go away and one of them would come back into his office and say, well, that's not really what I'm thinking. And it would change his mind with just one other person instead of as a team. And that was killing trust. And we did a little process there and they changed it and everything went up as far as trust. But, you know, selfishness, arrogance, a lack of the question you first asked was without people meaning to or knowing it, people, I mean, one of the easiest changes, people think they're clear when they're not.
Yeah.
They're not.
That is so true. That is so true. I people's self-perception of their clarity is, I think, in crazy. You know, when you take, and I used to do this with a major large software programming teams, and we were talking about user stories, and like, yeah, it's really, really clear. And they could not understand why another person couldn't get all of the things that they're in their mind on there. I said, you're not a good writer. You know, when you're writing, there's narrative, there's nouns, there's verbs. You've got to spell this out. And I said, it's just not there. And that without that clarity, people don't trust you're going to be a good team player in that. And I think that's really good. I think those eight pillars that you mentioned, when I look at them, one of the things I look at is I say, okay, I'm pretty good here from my own self-perception. I wonder, these are the ones I think I'm really good at. But if I turn that table around and said, where do you think I'm good? I would bet dollars to donuts that somebody else would say, Jim, I think you're really good in these areas, but these are the areas that you really need to work on and develop.
That's why we assess, right? Because we're blind. Self-assessments, we have a self-assessment too, but the problem with behavioral personality assessments like a DISC or a Working Genius or a Myers-Briggs can work because it's a personality style, but behavioral self-assessments, of course, are innately totally imperfect. They might give an insight. We mm-hmm. might use them in a seminar just so people kind of start thinking about it, but they're imperfect because people lie and they're blind to their own. That's why we use the team assessment or the Trusted 360, which has to be conducted right. Plenty of 360s have been poorly done and hurt people, but done right, it's one of the best ways to see the truth and be able to do something about it.
I like that. Now, is there on those trust pillars in society today, what's the, you know, clarity is one that you mentioned. Is there another one you can think of that's one that we really need to work on as a culture and a society today that is really, maybe it was better in the past and now it's kind of fallen?
Goodness. I think there's a lot of challenges here. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, character and competency, I think it's really interesting. You know, we used to, there's also counterforces to trust globally, well, this whole idea, I heard someone on a show recently say their goal as a kid was to become an influencer, right? And so, like, in fact, I know a pastor that had gotten big trouble, big problems, character-wise, because he was speaking at pastor's conference before he was, the first time he ever was at a pastor's conference when he was the speaker in his 20s. And he grew a church to a massive size, but he didn't have the character to hold that. I remember Tim Keller, the big church in New York, and he said, "Boy, it's good. God helped me grow this church little by little, mm-hmm. because I was able to build the character to hold this right." And so many people, you know, I think of a guy up here in Minnesota who got $100 million contract, and he was an absolutely fantastic quarterback. And then he got $100 million contract and he became terrible. Yeah. And it came too fast. He wasn't able to handle that, right? So I think one of this instant gratification society is really a challenge because trust takes work and time. I say it all the time, you know, motivational speaker, I want to make it all, let's go fast. You can change a habit in 21 days, which I don't buy into at all from the research, but basically, everybody in a lot of times in our world today wants such fast, and trust isn't like that. We need to build it over time. We need to do the work. People don't want to do the work. So that's a counterforce to the trust that we need and are talking about. There are other challenges I could go, you know, in government, we're so de-incentivized against trust, you know, building trust across the aisle now, which is a big challenge. For instance, you know, one side or the other will pull committee assignments if you try to work with the other side. A very good friend of mine was the Republican that walked across the aisle, put his arm around the Democrat and voted to confirm Biden because he thought it was the right thing to do, Republican and Democrat together. And nowadays, you know, there's a Republican and a Democrat deli in the Capitol, not together. You know, 100 years ago, the Republican and Democrat senator from California would duke it out on the floor, argue, and then they'd get on a train and eat every meal together 3 days home to California because they connected, they collaborated, they saw each other as human. There's a dehumanization on Capitol Hill right now, and there's a lack of connection and relationship that's hindering solutions, trust, and a host of other things. So that connection pillar is a big challenge. And we're getting bigger divides. You know, we used to have a bell curve on voting in America. Now we have a barbell. We're over here and way over here. And so that would be under the connection pillar. But if we could, you know, I read this quote when I went into the International Storytelling Festival Museum. International Storytelling Museum. And it said, perhaps if we heard everyone's story, where there would be no more war. And I think that's this connection pillar of just knowing each other, seeing each other, being able to see another perspective. That's a big challenge to trust globally, for sure. I could go down the pillars and say all of them, you know, but there's something that comes to mind quickly.
I think politically, the trust, it's not there because one of the challenges is my identity is starting to become part of the tribe that I'm in. And I'm in this tribe and I have my identity of the tribe. If my identity is threatened, I become this identity and I don't want to lose my identity and I'm afraid of losing my identity. Unfortunately, that was never your identity. You're only convinced that that's part of your identity. And so what we're trying to do is always find things that are reinforcing my identity. And if it doesn't reinforce my identity, I don't trust it. And that can be a challenge in that we're getting a little bit delusional in how we see things and how we view things. And so I think that's very interesting. But the trust killers that are out there, if you go through those eight pillars, any one of those, I think, and the thing that I love about these eight pillars is you bring clarity to those different situations. And that helps me become a better communicator. It helps me become more vulnerable. It helps me become more understanding for another person. And those are character areas that I'm constantly working on because I want to have more connection with people. I find fulfillment in connection. I love it when somebody has a different viewpoint than me and they're like, hey, well, what do you think? I said, who cares what I think? Let's get into what you want to think, whether it's political or religious or ideology, any type of things. I really want to understand where they're going from. And I think if more people did that, they would build trust. And they don't have to believe the way I believe.
Yeah.
But when they know I'm for them, I'm interested in how they see the world. They're interested in how I think about how they got to that point. I think there's more connection there.
True.
What's something leaders do because they think it builds trust, but actually destroys it?
Well, that's a great question. You know, partly it depends because some things, if they're done authentically, they'll do something and they won't do it authentically. And everybody can tell that, a message, whatever it is. One thing, we know personalizing things can help a lot. So like they might think the annual awards, an annual awards time really builds trust. And sometimes it doesn't. When a handwritten note would build a lot more trust, for example, or show a lot more compassion. One thing that's interesting around tying your last question to this question is the history of trust and how a long time ago it was very personal. You know, I didn't trust for a couple of reasons. I didn't know you. You're from that side of the mountain. You look differently now, or I trust you because I did know you and I've seen how you act close up. That was personal. That became institutionalized, and institutional trust has tanked. Media trust, you used to have the news, now you have your news and your news and your news. You used to have, you know, trust in government. 80% of Americans trust our government to do what's right. Now it's tanked. Then we had distributed trust with Uber and blockchain, and we have that still. But interesting data point in the last couple of years, trust has come back to very personal. I want to know you, see you, sit with you, touch you. And so anything we can think of is what can we do to be more personal. I mean, a handwritten note has never been more powerful than it is today because it is so uncommon compared to digital. So anyway.
That's really good. I think one of the things that I do that deters my trust, and this came from, I grew up as a dyslexic, and I would struggle to read in the third grade and the second grade. And basically your classmates, you know, thought you were stupid. Your teachers thought you were stupid because you would mix up words. Actually, I had really high intelligence, but I got tongue-tied. I got nervous. I got bent up. So one of the things I would do as a leader is always trying to prove my credibility that I'm smart. And in doing that, I could use large words and $20 vocabulary and, you know, all these, you know, well, he was recalcitrant and let's talk about the being epistemologically self-aware and just different words like that. And I'm trying to prove that I'm smart, and it really kills my trust because for a lot of people, it comes across that I'm better than you because I can use these bigger words and then I'm smarter than you. And it's not meaning to, but there are all sorts of things that leaders do that kill trust that they don't know they do it. And I think that's why it's very good to go through books like yours and start thinking about the different categories of trust.
Let me just say one more thing on that. And I think it's very astute of you. Whenever we overcomplexify, I think the work of trust is clarity, right? And that's usually simple, like simple and clear. But there are things to learn that elevate trust. Okay. So for instance, there are people like language does matter. So like being articulate is trusted. Like there's a lot of times balancing factors here because you're very articulate and that is trusted. So not just saying I'm so simple and I'm just going to be, you know, another point here is I was just working on this with some young leaders. And for example, etiquette matters. You can lose a lot of trust by not being self-aware in certain scenarios. So that can be like, you know, maybe it's just overall self-awareness really matters, but using certain language matters. You go up and down in trust based on using correct grammar, or, you know, not having your elbows at the on the table at a banquet or whatever. So, you know what I mean? So certain things. But there's this is where it's really a mix of not being overdone and like I've got to use the biggest words ever and I overcomplexify and I try to look smart and I'm pompous. But there is there's several of these words. It's this mix. It's like when we listening, right? Listening in America, generally looking you in the eye builds trust, but not staring at you weirdly. So it's like there's subtleties to how we do this stuff. It always is these eight, but how we do it, you know, it's the formal, but be informal and relaxed. It's be authentic, but care about the situation, you know? So that's where, you know, we get into the steeper, but it is those eight. And I would say when you said it, you nailed it in that I think the biggest things, one of the most common mistakes I see of leaders that lose trust, that think they're building it, is overcomplexifying. So let me give one tool for one, you know, a 60-second tool here. If you want your message to matter today, a rollout, a mission, a value, it's got to be MRA. It's got to be memorable, it's got to be repeatable, and it's got to be actionable. And most messages are missing one of those at least. And there's a great case study in a couple of my books about how Caribou Coffee went to number two to Starbucks because of leveraging this idea themselves. I'm not taking credit for it. And basically when they tanked in a way, they went away from this idea and they overcomplexified. And they're a great company. I know the CEO now bringing clarity back. I know the CEO back when they went to number one. They're great people and it's a great organization. But they lost one thing and that was clarity in a message that's memorable, repeatable, and actionable. This is what, you know, why sometimes the most clear messages are actually phrases, not words. Like people going, oh, integrity, we want that, right? Well, integrity, what does that look like? What's that, you know, it's not clear enough to really act on in a space compared to a phrase. So there's one little tool. Just think through your message. Is it memorable? Is it repeatable? And is it actionable?
I like that. Now, I've spent thinking about clarity and communication and leadership. I've spent a lot of time helping leaders become better communicators. And poor communication is a trust problem. I think it's more of a trust problem than trust is more of a communication problem. I think that leaders who can't communicate lose a lot of trust.
Totally. Well, isn't this Berkshire Hathaway? Buffett said, if I was to a room of Ivy League college students, said, the number one trait you should work on is your being able to present and communicate in front of people. That's what will take your value up by 50%.
That's good. That's true.
If I was going to spend time on anything, but think about it. I get amazing opportunities. Hopefully my content's great, but in my life, I've had immense opportunities because they've said, will you speak for us? Will you be in the board? Will you share? It seems like you're comfortable on the platform. Can you share that? Can you, you know, speak up? Be spokesman. And because they, you know, heard you, saw you, you got the next opportunity. So by the way, 25, 30 years ago, I was sick to my stomach backstage behind the curtain, you know, but anyway.
Well, I'll tell you what, you are a great keynote speaker and I've seen a lot of them. I do that professionally. I have studied that for years and years and years. And when you get up, I noticed, I saw you with a plethora of other speakers. And when you started talking, if I open up my notebook and get out my pen and I start taking notes feverishly, you know, that's, oh, this is good. This is good. And so you've really honed your craft. You do very good at it.
Thank you. Even that, you know, I appreciate that. And maybe there's some, I, by God's grace, some gifting. But people don't know the work of being better at anything. And I thought, I really want to share this, I want to be great. And, you know, now I'm a speaker Hall of Fame with Zig Ziglar and others, but people don't know, like, I had coaching. I took stand-up comedy, not wanting to be a stand-up comedian. I took improv, not ever wanting to do improv. I took, you know, I still get critiqued. And I think some people, like, go and speak. Oh, yeah, I get paid to speak. I do the speaking. Like, I'm just going to go do it. And you can be a solid B, Most speakers, as far as I know, are not nearly as good as they think they are, because everybody says great job. And the ones that are saying great job are just glad they didn't have to be on stage, right? So to really be exceptional, like anything, tennis, football, speaking, being a leader in a boardroom, it takes work and it takes critique and feedback and taking it over and over and over. And I think even on that, like I push myself competency wise because I want them to say, I care about this message of trust. And so I want to do all I can to transform people with the moments I have. And I do want that meeting planner to say, that's the best we've ever had. Of the 10 speakers, you were the best we ever had. Because I think it's my duty to be my best for them and for the sake of the message.
Yeah. Yeah. You're very talented and you've worked on your craft. So let me ask you another question, a little bit about transparency and authenticity. What kind of role does transparency have, and can a leader be authentic and still lose trust?
Well, they can, but let me, on the transparency side, the newest data, I think I have it correct in my head, 92%, well, first let me say this. There's a leap, you know, when I started the research, very few people talking about trust. Now there's everybody's talking about trust with and mostly without research. So today there's a guy that says trust is transparency. That is not true. We know the data shows transparency can build trust, but transparency on its own isn't equal to trust. For example, some of our kids might be so transparent on social media, I don't trust them for a second, right?
Yeah. Whereas,
but confidentiality is also trusted. So when I do the quarterly earnings report, do I need to be transparent or confidential? Some of each it might be. So transparency does play a big role. So let me give you the newest data that I know. 92% of employees would trust their senior leader more if they were more transparent about their mistakes. So we know, you know, this doesn't mean, oh, I'm supposed to be transparent. I was the homecoming king and the football captain. I'm the best ever. Nobody cares, right? But transparent about their mistakes. On the other hand, you can see the complexity of this, because if someone is overly transparent in the wrong way, yeah, I'm terrible. I'm no good. I lost this. I did terrible at that. Just follow me. Like, that's also a challenge. But most leaders could be more transparent about their mistakes and they would do better. They would be followed more. Most people need to be more transparent about challenges, and that would be more authentic. So that's a bit of data on transparency.
I like that.
Yeah. Some people are, the other question is a little, maybe too complex for our time left, but authenticity.
All right, well, let's do this. Instead of going to that question, let's do a couple of rapid fires here. So I'm going to ask you really quickly. Trust is?
A confident belief in a person, a product, or an organization.
The biggest misconception about trust is?
That it's something you have or you don't. You can't build it. I have not seen any of these. I thought I went through your data. Like, this is right off my head right now.
Yeah, okay. Leaders lose trust when they
overcomplexify, lie, say just trust me.
Love that. I love that.
Let me give you another one. Humility, when they're arrogant.
Okay, got it. The most trusted people in my life taught me
humility.
The future of leadership depends on
trust.
Very good. Very good. David, this is, I could spend another hour with you on this. I'm glad that you've written books. I'm glad that there's content out there that I can go out and find. And I'm going to encourage all of my listeners to go to Amazon or any place, go to your website, get your book. This is one skill set that is something you've got to look at personally and develop and grow in character with this issue. I think it's really important. So you've spent your career studying this trust, and I've spent mine studying leadership and communication and relationship. If there's one thing that I've learned, it's rarely that people remember what we know. They remember how we made them feel.
No doubt about it.
And that comes down to trust.
Absolutely. Jim, I trust you.
Thank you. Thank you. We got to do this again. I feel like I found a new friend, and I just thank you again for being on the show. And I'll put some information if you want to find more out about David, and you can connect with him online or through all of the socials or see him speak or read his books. He's got all the stuff out there. So David, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you, Jim.